Welcome back to D Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be the second version of this same exact show I've recorded because my audio on the first version was all fuzzy. So I would talk and it sounded like someone was ruffling papers on top of me, which was really strange. So I got a new computer and I'm using Audition from Adobe Suite. So we'll see if this thing cacks on a really long recording. I gave it a good 45-minute test last night. It seemed to work just fine, so hopefully this is going well. Today's episode is about something I'm calling consensus reality. And it dawned on me through the previous episode that, you know, we're all... It's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of folks trying to study the shape of the Earth, right? And part of it's just led by the fact that we have a space agency that is notorious for lying through their teeth about accomplishments in order to advance an agenda from the 60s where, you know, it was like a Cold War battle. Most of us kids born in that era, the tail end of that era, are bored to death of it. You know, get over your Ruski hating bullshit and let's move on with life and let's admit what we've done and what we haven't done so we can really do what we need to do. So what would consensus reality be? Well, I'm not the first person to suggest this by any stretch of the means. You know, we all have consciousness. And this is something that science absolutely struggles with. You know, they'll just blatantly say to you they know exactly what it is and they've got nothing. Really. But egos prevail most of the time, right? And society, who operates pretty much in a blissful ignorance, which is not a bad thing, will open up a door and kind of look in a direction. Well, how did the universe start? And then some blowhard says, well, the Big Bang, man. Well, how do you know that? Well, I read it once, man. It was on TV. And, you know, TV doesn't lie. And so we get these ridiculous fairy tales that help the blissfully ignorant explain what they can't explain, and then they feel more secure that the mystery of life has been explained, right? The problem is that doesn't have any scientific method attached to it, any due diligence, any scrutiny. And so you need that in order to really assure yourself that you're on the right track. But what if the reality that you and I live in is merely a set of realizations, inventions, decisions to acknowledge what we see today that started way back before we had any semblance of a universe? We conceived of the fabric that would create a reality, and therefore it exists. Who knows if we have to exert effort to make it here, make it exist, right? We're not necessarily thinking about every single ethereal particle in the universe. Maybe we've set aside a bunch of us to do that, and then a bunch of us get to play inside the facility. You know, sort of like a Westworld analogy of, you know, thousands of people that build that place, hold it together, and then a bunch of guests get to go inside, which number in the hundreds, while tens of thousands are working on the outside. Similar could be played out for the Truman Show. But there's a few interesting things, and I'm going to romanticize a few things that I think we know on this show are different than what I'm going to suggest, but it's just let your mind kind of feel this out a little bit. Now, there's a lot of us that think that the space station footage, especially the ISS footage, is fake. We see slip up after slip up where, you know, they'll be looking at a monitor in HQ. The Russians made this mistake. They were doing spacewalks, and then they said, oh my God, we have to figure out how to save the astronauts in space. And they said they had a live feed from their space station, and it was a guy in underwater, and you saw these bubbles coming up. And so the thing with the ISS is that they've never taken a single video shot, to my knowledge, of the moon, which should be the most glorious ball in the sky you've ever seen. They build their space station such that the only opening is directly on Earth and never an opening back the other way. But it wouldn't matter. During a spacewalk, all they have to do is turn their head to the moon. The other thing is that they don't believe they've ever filmed the sun either. And what's interesting about that is that the ISS is always filming the Earth when it's lit, which means the sun should be directly behind the space station. Now, digital cameras back when they first came out would burn out if you looked at the sun. If you pointed them at the sun, the sensor inside the camera being magnified like a magnifying glass that starts a fire on your leg, it would just fry the inside of the camera. But they have advanced cameras to the point where you can definitely do a brief, you know, exposure to the sun. You won't burn out the camera. In fact, quite a bit of exposure. But you never see that. But now the interesting thing is that we have these shots from space where we don't have any stars. And of course, they always blame the aperture of the cameras, which, okay, let's just say 98% of the time you have to keep the aperture adjusted for filming local objects, which are very bright, and the sun that's very bright, so you have to crank it all the way down. And let's just say that most stars disappear. Now, you still have to explain why the Milky Way isn't visible, because it's a blanket in space. Right, without the atmosphere distorting light, that thing should be literally a tapestry that's immutable. Okay, with stars, you have stars like Sirius, which when I took astronomy, they always said it was slightly brighter than the moon. It puts out more lumens than the moon. Okay, you have the Polaris North Star. You've got a few stars out there that are very bright. Plus, you have Venus that should be very, very bright at various times of the year. So there's some stars that should penetrate even the tightest aperture, you know, aside from filming, you know, through a sun lens. So why am I going on and on about the ISS when this is something about consensus reality? Well, imagine if stars are not visible because they don't exist. Because man can't really imagine that much content at once. And so we have imagined this blue marble or this dish or this whatever, and we can't conceive of really all the stars that are out there, but we can conceive of a tapestry against a blanket that maybe we can drive through it, maybe we can get on the other side of it. It doesn't have to make sense once we imagine it. And that's the key. There's folks that can see through the moon, and there's a star that, or even Venus, that appears to go through the moon. There's photographs of this. I haven't personally seen this. I'll let you know if I ever see it. But we've seen photographs that go through, and again, it could be a complete hoax by somebody. I wouldn't put it past anyone on the internet to do that. There's folks trying to do experiments to figure out if the Earth is flat, if it's round. And what's really strange about it is that the flat Earth physical models that we see from the ancient history, even illustrations, make the North Pole a big bump, and then it goes down and goes up on the edge. But no one seems to give a shit about that model when they're looking at this flat Earth thing. Again, there's been a video out there, I think it's by Globebusters, that... Or no, sorry, I forgot what they call themselves. It's like Flat Earth Busters or something like that. And I think that they have absolutely destroyed the Flat Earth theory with the direction in which the sun travels during the day. It goes the complete opposite polarity or directional polarity that it should if it's a disc. So I think If you want to fight the fact that you think it's a globe, that's fine. But a disc is not the shape. Because the sun shows up in the southeast and sets in the southwest. And that's the exact opposite that it would travel during the day. Plus it goes, you know, high north in the middle of the afternoon and then goes back down. So that shape is the wrong shape. Should be inverted. But I said in my existentialism episode in season 2 that what if the greatest secret in the world is that we control our environment? Now, the secret and what the bleep do we know are two attempts by individuals to teach you that you do control your reality. And some of it is on some existential, you pick your next second reality and you're actually controlling the universe. And the other side of the game is neural peptides, which are sort of stem cell peptides that you can imagine what you want to be physically, as well as mentally, I guess you could say. And these peptides will transform into whatever image you have of yourself. So if you think of yourself as heavy, these things will transform into that and make you fat. If you think yourself as a rock star, it'll just rip you out and you get rock hard abs and all that kind of stuff, right? And that's a medical reality. Then you study De Lamarck, who invented all of the theories of evolution that Darwin ripped off after the Battle of Waterloo. And he talked about epigenetics, which Darwin couldn't understand, which is why it took another 200 years for us to get that information into the public eye. What De Lamarck figured out in the late 1700s was that we are an electrical object. Human construct is electrical, and that when we think, we create electrical patterns that then communicate with the membranes of our cells, which then communicate with the interiors of our cells, and thus evolve ourselves during our own lifetime. Now, I want to reflect on the fact that the overall theme of reality today is that people who are atheists and grumpy atheists, I should say, is that they believe that we are built in a world where we have no control, right? Babies die. People get sick. Now, again, in a world where we reincarnate, all of that torment doesn't really matter, right? It's just a cycle. We just renew. When you die in a video game and you're immediately resurrected, you don't give a shit that you died. Really. I mean, you know, you lose 10% of your endurance on your armor and all that kind of stuff, but overall you're fine, right? But if you just simply look at epigenetics, we have control over who we are. For any of you who've had premonitions where you felt like not only did you start seeing the future, the immediate future, but that you could control where you ended up in that immediate future, you will realize that there's a lot more control. For any of you who believe in law of attraction, or just when you're about to crash and burn, however that's defined, emotionally, financially, whatever, and somebody comes by and saves your ass, it always seems to occur. Well, then you've noticed that the universe has a few fail-safes that will keep you eating and keep you sheltered. So we have, I think, a preponderance of evidence that we have control over this universe. Tiny, tiny things. And the only difference between you believing in this control and experiencing the control and the beauty of that control is your belief that you can. For anyone who's really benefited from law of attraction, you will roll your eyes when someone tells you it's deterministic, that you have no choice, and it's all written in a book of blah, blah, blah by God. You know, I guarantee you, God having it all figured out, if you're an omnipotent creator of this universe and you've got it all figured out, there's no reason for you to exist. There's no reason for any of us to exist either. Well, what do? You're just basically looking at a creation, and you're just looking at it at a point where it's like, well, I know everything about this thing. There's no mystery. There's no resolve. There's no surprises. You can't be happy. You can't be upset. Because it's all figured out. It's like the minute you invent comedy, God also writes every joke that could possibly exist instantaneously. And then it's like what, he has one big giant laugh and it's over? Because everything is created in an absolute completeness. We have Mandela effects, right? Now, the Mandela effect could simply be all of us getting a bunch of information wrong and the internet's able to sort it out for us, right? It is very strange that Interview with the Vampire or Interview with a Vampire, you know, the author got it wrong for a decade. She could not remember her own book's name. That's pretty interesting. James Earl Jones can't remember the real line spoken in Empire Strikes Back. He spends nearly 30 years not only taking interviews about, he says, "Luke, I'm your father," instead of "No, I'm your father." And he also recreates it at Star Wars conventions. "Luke, I'm your father." All of us remember it that way, or a bunch of us remember it that way, and then all of a sudden it's "No, I'm your father." Pretty interesting, right? But what if reality is a consensus? Every single scrap of it is a consensus. We know that words, as I mentioned in a previous episode, the word dissect or dissect is pronounced dissect. That's the real way to say the word. But we just consensus it into retardation. And now we say it incorrectly. Data is really data. We have rules about how vowels are separated by consonants, create longs and shorts. But the more ignorant society gets, there's a consensus to be ignorant. Where is that headed, right? I mean, how many of you have seen a show on TV where they're pitching, you know, the sales numbers for a corporation and there's a line chart? And the line chart's always supposed to go up because you're supposed to generate more money for your shareholders. Nobody wants to bring in the line graph that goes down. But when it comes to the consensus of reality that we're willing to live in right now, it's the stupider, the better. And it's not... it's really stupid. It's not ignorant. It's stupid. It's hearing something that makes no sense at all and endorsing it. The only... I would say this. If we could undo all the horrors of the world that we exist in today, all the 9/11 stuff, all these terrorist attacks, all these false flags and crisis actors, if we could totally undo the knowledge of that and go back to the more peaceful sort of world that we had, say, 40 years ago, you might find me assisting that process. To get us back to goodness, goofiness, right? Dancing on Soul Train and lines, right? And that's like it. Breakdancing in the 80s instead of fighting and shooting and stabbing each other. Yeah, you might find me help out with that process. But what's happening today in the ignorance that we have breeding into this world, which affects the consensus, all right, is that we are locking in horrific things. And we're locking in crappy science. You know, Bill Nye the douchebag guy and Neil deGrasse ass Tyson. These two guys are looking at the age discrimination curve that happens at their age. And they found a sweet job. Lie to the public 24/7 and make money off of it. What do you care? Right? It's that old Rockefeller thing where they said, you know, why do you care about someone else? Just protect your own. Protect your family and yourself. That's all that you can possibly affect. So screw the rest of the world. And that, of course, is spoken out of a mind of complete ignorance, which when playing chess might be able to conceive of two moves ahead. Because once this Rockefeller take care of your own and fuck everyone else attitude becomes the mainstay of a reality, you create a world that you wouldn't want to live in because you dumb down and make the rest of the population ignorant. And that's sort of what's going on in the world today, right? They want to impede our education. Then they want to call us cattle or sheep or whatever, and they make fun of us. Okay. How's that going to work out over the course of 100 years? But back to consensus reality. What fuels this notion? Well, I think it's fueled by a couple things. One is the fact that we have anomalies that we can't really understand. And they're in all corners of the world, right? Again, from the fabric of reality that would say it was this way, but now it's this way, the Mandela effect, to the notion that we have seen the fact that at times human beings can control things. Again, I'm going to repeat something I said in season one and two, which is that, and this is going to make some of you roll your eyes, but stay with me and hopefully understand that I'm not going to throw this out there and some pay attention to me, give me all this attention because I'm so fragile. I need your edification. Back in the 90s, when I started working, you know, full-time at, a lot at Electronic Arts, my buddies and I would role-play Dungeons & Dragons and a system called Champions. And we did some Shadowrun too. But here I am in this room with the best game designers on planet Earth. We have like a bank president in there, a female bank president, and another guy who's a big designer. So some pretty intellectual people in the room. And my buddies were able to create storylines that we would crawl into and believe. And for those of you who don't know how this works, you sit in a room for 4 to 6 hours, pizzas are delivered, you have your die, and you listen to a guy tell you what's happening, you make choices, you roll dice to figure out how it works. It's the crazy die, you know, a tetrahedron, you know, dice, 12-sided die, 10-sided die, all that kind of stuff, and you figure out what your odds are. And there is a moment, it happened to me twice, just twice, where the story got so rich and so intense that I was rolling this 20-sided die. So you have to break down the odds. I've got a 1 in 20 of rolling a 20. It's got literally 1 through 20 on the die. If you roll 1 in Dungeons & Dragons, you fumble your weapon, or you have to roll to save your weapon. But most of the time you break your weapon. I mean, it's just bad. But when you roll a 20, you get double damage. It's the best thing you could possibly do. My buddy had told a story, just to recap. The very first time it ever happened to me, our party was going through this underground tunnel. It's like a big giant opening, you know, like cathedral huge. And it just goes and goes and goes. And it's lit by a glowing moss. And we walked into a tavern that had just been ransacked. We could see that someone had ransacked and raped and pillaged everything in this place. And my character was a wood elf. And I go inside this room, and there's a wood elf female on the ground, which I haven't seen too many wood elves in this whole journey, which lasted 6 months. And it's like 6 months of playing, once a week at least. And this wood elf female is on the ground, and he describes how she was raped and murdered. It was graphic. Graphic to the absolute maximum of graphic. And he did such an amazing job that all of us sort of felt awful in the room, because we're adopting this as reality, right? Which is the fun of role-playing. Well, it makes you a great screenwriter, too. And so I'm pissed. I'm really pissed off, and we keep going down this river that goes down the center of this thing. That's how we move. And all of a sudden we bump into, I believe, it was like some orcs. And orcs are, in this particular gaming system, were pack animals. They don't, it's just like the movie Fifth Element. If you kill the leader, they don't know what to do, and they tend to surrender. And so we come around the corner, and I'm the big muscle in the role-playing thing, in the group. And I see an orc captain or whatever sitting in a throne. It's one of these thrones that they carry around, you know. And he's sitting there, and all of his minions are doing shit, raping and pillaging the next location. But he's just sitting there with a goblet of wine or whatever. And I have this vision of this girl in my head, which was told to me 15 minutes earlier or whatever. And so in my mind, it was complete certainty that I needed to kill this guy. So without telling my party, I start running towards this guy. You know, the carefree young warrior who doesn't understand he could blow the whole pooch by screwing, by running away without help, right? And so I just start charging. And then the GM, the DM, Dungeon Master guy looks at me, my buddy, and he's like, "Oh, really?" I says, "Okay." He goes, "Roll the hit." And so I got this 20-sided die. And I start holding it in my hand, just like, you know, like when you roll a die. And my mind was so into this story that what happened when I was rolling this die is that, so while I'm rolling this die, reality starts to wrap around me like a sphere. And so all of the light around me, it was like I was inside of a crystal ball and everything was warped around me in the room. It was mind-blowing. And here I am just chugging on this die. And then I call it. I said, "This is going to be a 20. Boom, I throw it on the table. Sure enough, it's a 20. My buddy, who's the dungeon master, says, "Okay, fine. You cut this guy in half." Boom. Killed the leader. We swept up the rest of these confused orcs and it was over. And I got done with that role, and I realized I'd had this transcending experience. It's almost as if my body, it was, you know, turned into pure light or something. I mean, it was strange. It was not lighter or something, but I felt like I lost the bond with being controlled by the reality in the room, and I ended up being a player in the mechanics of the universe. Just really, really strange. And so I turned to my buddy, and I said, "Dude, I just controlled the dice." And he looks at me, having played since he was about 8 years old, and he says, "Yeah, you can do that. You can control the die." And so I let the game finish, and then I came back to him and I said, "Well, what did you mean by that?" And he says, "Well, if you play long enough, you'll understand that once the story matures to a certain point, you can control the die. You just can." And of course, my mind's a little blown, but I realized that, you know, well, the other thing is I talked to a friend of mine who back in the 60s got a hold of a mind over matter kind of book, just like the episode in Twilight Zone. And he got to a point where he said he could control reality. This book taught you how to control reality. And he said he got so good at it that he got terrified that he was responsible for whatever happened. And he goes, at one point he came to a four-way intersection and he felt the responsibility of controlling all the vehicles through the intersection such that no one got hurt. Because four cars went right there at the same time at all the stop signs. And so then you're like, who the hell goes first, right? He said it freaked him out. And so he had to condition himself away from that level of reality. So why make this episode? What's the big deal? So just to go on and on about an esoteric concept? Let me take it to another level. What if, as many of us suspect, man tens of thousands of years ago understood all of this because we weren't being conditioned away from it? There weren't evil people running around the planet running the goddamn place like it is today, right? Isn't it amazing that the people that run our planet are almost pure concentrated fucking evil, either through being ignorant shills or being absolutely intentional shit starters. They love their sociopathic, psychopathic loathing for society because they turned out to be a piece of shit themselves. They want the whole world to burn, right? But what if they are the ones that understand this better than anyone? Then what? Now, there's a psychological reality to consensus reality in that you could bullshit a bunch of people over and over and over again. Again, the best form of brainwashing is repetition. And you can get social justice warriors to pop out, you know, where you're like, "Oh, don't you hate being the disenfranchised? Oh, yes." And then it's like, okay, well, you got to hate everyone who's got their shit together. Oh, that sounds good. You know, because then you don't have to get your shit together, right? You know, the being offended world My God. What's really, really funny about the being offended world is it's an unsustainable model of reality, right? What will happen to the social justice warriors of the world is that they're going to go smack that up against a society that has absolutely no attribute that matches theirs. Meaning, this being offended society, if they were to ever get their way, which they won't, but if they did, they were going to go head up against someone like, the radical Islams, who are going to basically slay them. It'll just be over, just instantaneously, and they'll be gone, and then we'll go back another fucking 10,000 years in sociological development, and then we'll fight our way out of that, it'll be crazy. But what if the elite of the world understood that to tell you that the world is a particular way, and I mean, it's the world is a multifaceted, multidimensional thing, of course, right? So imagine they tell you the world's round. They tell you the world's flat. They tell you the world is some bizarre thing. Imagine if the stars don't exist because we simply can't conceive of them, which is why most of us don't dream of really traveling the stars. We've only had a couple people who are Trek fans say they dreamed being on the Enterprise, but all my buddies that actually made the Enterprise episodes, again, I haven't talked to every single one of them, but a good 14 of them, after my buddy who's one of the head guys there went in and said, have any of you dreamed of being in space your whole life? And they all said no. And he's like, holy shit, this is wild. How is it that we imagine reality, but we can't seem to imagine it when we go to bed? And then at that stage, imagine this. And this is what I don't understand. I'm playing tongue in cheek just a little bit, but imagine if NASA, traveling in low orbit, gets up there and realizes it's a blank canvas up there. It's almost disturbingly black, right? And there's electrical cosmologists that say you can't see the stars because it doesn't bounce through the atmosphere. I kind of find that to be potentially true, but guess what? I have liquid inside my eyeballs that behave like an atmosphere. It should be that when photons bounce inside my eyeball, it's a physical reality that it disturbs the rods and cones in my eyes and gives me sight of the star. The fact that I need somehow it to, bounce through and refract through an atmosphere for me to see seems like a bunch of bullshit, right? Staring at the goddamn sun in space should be blinding, right? But let's just say they get up there and there's nothing. They go down below and there's stars and there's a moon and a sun. They don't even understand where the hell it comes from. They're like, well, it's there. But when we go over this atmosphere, we don't see it anymore. But it's there. And somehow the Earth is lit, right? But for whatever reason, we can't see it when we're up there. And so NASA thinks to themselves, well, geez, what is this reality? And someone whispers to them, well, it's because we are conceiving of reality and we can't conceive of stars. I mean, we can put them in a nice neat pattern up there, but we can't really envision Mars, Venus. We can conceive of a few planets, but maybe NASA's an organization that's turned into an organization that says, dream, humans, dream. Think of something bigger. And all the Star Trek episodes have this really hidden subtext of dream about planets, dream about stuff. Every sci-fi thing that space travels, dream of this reality, people, so we can get off this planet and have a good time. The religious people want to believe the Earth is at the center of the universe. Well, that's kind of cool. Maybe it's only at the center of the universe because we are the only thing that has created reality. Now, for those of us who want to grow out of our narcissistic attentions of being the supreme being in the universe, and we want to dumb ourselves down to poor humans and there's all these better aliens out there, I understand why they fight that. But maybe in the end, we're it. We also want to believe that there's a supreme being And I guess the best way to think about a supreme being, in my opinion, is to think that we don't really consciously, and maybe we don't need to consciously think about it, but we have a whole universe around us, right? And it works perfect, like I always say. I don't want to repeat myself too much, but think about it. Those of you who are very in tune with lies, and you could just feel, you don't know the truth necessarily all the time, but you can just feel a goddamn lie. It's like, this book is wrong, this person is wrong. It doesn't mean they're trying to manipulate you in any way, shape, or form. It just means they've heard something that was erroneous, or they've just had a bad hunch. And for whatever reason, they're not as in touch with what is true and what is false. And so they end up repeating lies, or repeating an untruth. They're trying to find the truth, right? But think about how we are being infiltrated on a daily basis with our operating systems on our computers, on our telephones, on our TVs. They are trying to crawl into every nook and cranny of our brain right now. Apple releases one version of their OS after another. And I tell you what, they always say they've got, 200 features or whatever fucking lie they've got. But most of them, two-thirds of them, three-fourths of those new features all have to do with social media notifications. Embedding everything in everything, right? You can't use your computer to write a letter without worrying about whether or not you're going to share the goddamn letter over Twitter. Something that's impossible. But they've got it everywhere, embedded everywhere. It's all over your phones, Android, iOS, whatever. You turn on your TV and it's just, the supreme commander of applications of social media discourse being shoved at you, right? What are the apps on your TV? They're trying to push you into being conditioned 24/7. All right. You have to make the decision of whether or not you want that to be the case. But so, on this fundamental level, we have programming that goes on all day and we know it. Yeah, no big deal. I get programmed is what you think. Okay. Then you have to make the decision of whether or not you want to be programmed. If we are beings that lived forever in a universe of any kind, a vacuum of mass energy, let's just say, and we just keep going and keep going, we have to have a medium by which we can discuss things. If we're living in a vacuum of nothing, what could you possibly discuss? How could you communicate? Okay, maybe you're living in pure love. Maybe that's pretty awesome. But in the end, if you don't go to the park or amusement park or have children or whatever, what can you talk about after a while? You don't have anything. You don't have the 50s diner to go to and say, oh my God, my eggs were overcooked. You have nothing. And so out of an imperative, we must create a universe. We just have to. If we're going to, I don't know if insanity exists, if there's nothing out there, but it'd just be boring as hell. How it gets started, what the fabric of the universe would be, well, it could be utterly arbitrary. I got a friend of mine who made a computer out of carbohydrates. Well, who would have ever conceived of that? Unless you're a genius like he was, right? So you can make anything out of anything as long as you can conceive of the bits and pieces that do the job, right? So for those of you looking at the shape of the world, what if it's not any shape, right? What if it's just a bunch of dream conceptions in your mind? So let's think about for a second. And this is a way I like to encourage you guys to think about the universe, because let me review with you, I think, the traditional methodology that you are instinctively taught to decipher the universe, and then let me give you a different perspective, if this is different to you, should be valuable to you. It's the following. You were taught that the universe is much bigger than you, and that you are, sort of like Douglas Adams said in the Total Perspective Vortex, you are infinitely small. An infinitely small dot on an infinitely small dot. Infinitely small. Insignificant. You lack the very physical and mental capability of deciphering this reality. Because just look at the universe. Look at how huge it is. When you look up at the stars, you are so incapable of figuring it out. Now, the other kind of side offshoot to that is you can be a narcissistic physicist or cosmologist and just make shit up, pat yourself on the back. Okay. It's not like they all have bad intent, of course. They're trying. But the problem is with theoretical physicists and physicists in general is that you have a very left brain, total lack of right brain regiment of human beings that pretend as if they have any fucking clue what the right brain does, right? They've never taken ayahuasca. They've never taken acid. And they've never seen love as a particle, right? And then you have the rest of us. And let me give you the alternative theory. The alternative theory is, hey, if you created the universe, wouldn't you leave behind some clues? Wouldn't a neat puzzle be you're stuck in this reality until you finally decipher what this reality is? And you're guaranteed by the writer, which might be you or a bunch of people like you, you are guaranteed to have all of the clues available to you. You just need to know that this is a game of figuring that out. If no one tells you it's a game, and then you just sort of live life and it's just functional, get up, make money, go to bed, get up, make money, go to bed, and you die. Nothing interesting happens. But the second that you say, okay, well, you know what, I am interested in how this world's put together. It seems to own me and I don't like that. Maybe you do like it, but you want to have a little bit more interaction. You lack a mystery. I want you to realize that it might just be that you have 100% of the clues. Now, based on your academic background, you may be ready for some clues. In fact, I think it's probably a split between the two. I wouldn't worry about, you know, aerospace knowledge and, you know, super duper physics and various divisions of, you know, QED stuff. It might be that a child is only capable of seeing certain clues because they're not indoctrinated yet away from that truth. And so the more childlike you remain and the more open-minded you remain, you might end up being the most knowledgeable about the universe. But I want you to approach it from the standpoint that you are a soul in this universe and you are merely observing it as a participant in its creation. You could view it from a perspective of you are God, and you need to do something about this vacuum in space, vacuum of purpose, or view yourself as one of many like you that is sitting in the void. And it's up to you to figure out how you're going to run the day, right? Well, you know, we should probably create something. You want to make a game? Yeah, sure. Well, what do you think? You know, and you create Parcheesi a couple times and some hearts and spades and poker and blackjack, and then you're kind of like, Jesus, this numeric thing's pretty cool. It's pretty fun, but how about it? Let's figure out a different way to exist. And someone goes, yeah, awesome. What do you mean? Well, I have invented this idea called touch. What is that? I don't know. Let me try this out. Okay, hop inside this little robot that I call Human, and I'll jump in mine, and then I'll touch you. Okay, great. You jump inside, and they touch. Oh my God, what a wild sensation. They grab you down by the little giblies down below, and you're like, hoo-hoo, boy, I love that thing. And he says, yeah, right? Isn't that awesome? I made that myself last night. Well, you must have stayed up forever. Yep. What is day? I don't know. We're in heaven. Okay. But in the end, we end up creating this fabric of the universe. And what's really funny about it is that you have these esoteric concepts like numbers, right? Numbers are pretty interesting. They go up forever, they go down forever, they divide forever, they multiply forever. Sort of a wild construct that exists in our brains, which we have a hard time conceiving. Well, now, if you think about the universe, all it is in an utter physical extension of the numbering system. You know, Earth small, Sun large, lots of grains of sand, lots of stars in the sky, you know. What are we built out of? Trillions of cells, and you know, beyond that, trillions times trillions of particles of information. Because we have access to a database, we believe that time exists, because we can see the before, middle, and end of something, right? There's a means to consensus reality. There is. We have arbitrarily, potentially, decided how the universe is put together. And let's, in closing here, let's spend about 10 minutes on love. Right? So, what is it that every single human being goes for? And this is what's really fascinating. The common denominator experience is love. It doesn't mean if it doesn't matter if you're, you know, a total asshole elitist. You love being an elitist. You love your tiny penis and your total control over the world. You love it. You love getting back at society because when you were little, you were awkward, and you're now going to punish the world for it. I mean, that's the most extreme that we would say. They have no love in their heart. They're godless people. I would disagree with you. But in the end, the normal human being, the healthy human being, which is probably 99% of the universe, or at least, you know, when I say universe, I mean Earth, we're going through the normal ups and downs of love. You have your interpersonal relationships that are your family sector, and you have love there. You have love with your spouse, with your children, with your family members. Before that, you have your love within yourself. Can you dig looking in the mirror? You're not perfect, but you know you're working on it. And then you have your job. What are you doing to live? So there's that as well. Love is in there because it provides a bunch of feedback, which is, you know, on one level, love is a feedback of your own evaluation of things, of yourself, of your family, of how well you've done. And then love turns into purpose, which is your drive. Why do you exist? But isn't it interesting that it's the one unifying factor about this entire world? A lot of folks will say God is love and love is God. Well, that's a different way of saying the universe is love and love is the universe. So with that knowledge in mind, again, why do you turn on a television show? Because you love it. Or you want to love it. You're trying to love it. Why do you go eat at a particular restaurant over another restaurant? Because you like this one better than that one. Why do you play a particular song when you're driving fast down the highway or cruising on a boat in Havasu at 114 degrees in August? Because you love it. You love it all. It is your absolute unifying force. So we have to, I mean, that's just a clue, right? That's a clue to how this universe was created. Because as human beings, that's what motivates us, right? Same thing goes for every single conscious creature that we can look at. Now, who knows what plants think? They don't have any eyes or legs, so they're supposedly stupid. Crazy. But these are the little fabrics of clues that we can start pulling the thread out of the sweater to get what we need. So when people say, oh my God, I cannot believe in God because children suffer. Oh, okay. So in all other cases in the universe, love is at the very core of the design principle of how every single life form behaves. But supposedly, one, that whole thing came out of nothing, right? It's the atheist Big Bang, right? Love just was invented at the singularity. Right, everything that lives operates off of a preference. You go over to creationism, and again, it doesn't have to be Jesus Christ and all this other stuff. It just means that a bunch of beings or one being work together to create the reality that we have. It was a driving force. You know, when you make a movie, when you write a film, there's something called a controlling idea, and it is the overall arc of why tell this story at all. What's the purpose? What's the moral of the story that I'm supposed to get out of the story? You know, it could be something like good always triumphs over evil. But the story, you look at the story, and they never say good, they never say evil, there's no God, there's no devil in the story. But in the end, that story is about good always prevails over evil. Or crime doesn't pay, right? There is a controlling idea to the creation of the universe, I assure you. And I'm going to say, because you have consciousness, You are, or have been, or are right now, a participant in the creation of this universe. If nothing else, just like the Bistro in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you are an integral part of the computer that is performing this program. You know, you think about computers and they have all this memory inside and it's doing all kinds of wild instructions. Well, you're one of those people. You're a participant in this gigantic program. So in some view, in some existential view of the universe, you can see the proof of the proof in the pudding of this particular episode's assertion of consensus reality. If you could get a bunch of humans to move in a particular direction, you would control the way that this universe is perceived. I mean, what if you could throw a party and everybody came? The whole world came to your party. And then you played a particular song to them or read them a story that everyone could understand with their little, you know, babel fish in their ear. They get it. And they all become different. They all become more peaceful, perhaps. We see the unification of mankind for the first time in frickin' reality. That's consensus reality. It's not going to happen, most likely, but you know, if you could do it, if you could fly everybody or teleport everyone to a single location, and you had the best story in the world ready for them to hear, you would definitely create more of a consensus in this world. You would. And it would probably be based on a story of loving each other. I think your homework from this episode would be give this some thought. I want you to study your past. For those of you with pretty good memories of what's happened to you in your life, study your past and see if there's any moment when you believe you've controlled reality a little bit, if not just absolute. Think about the times when your life was really great, and think about your state of mind when life was great. Were you optimistic about the world and then life was great? It's probably not that you were pessimistic about the world and life was great. That probably didn't happen. So in one way, you had a consensus about your reality that was positive and stuff just couldn't go wrong, right? You just threw the dart with your eyes closed and it was straight bullseye, right? It's funny, that analogy I want to share with you. I was playing, I think it's called cricket, with darts. And with this psychologist. And we're playing darts, and he hit a bullseye, just right down the center of this thing. And I remember having a similar thing with the die that I was going to hit the bullseye as well. And I threw my dart directly into the back of his dart. So the pinpoint of my dart went right down the center of the barrel of his dart, splitting it. He flipped out. He just said, "Oh my God." He pulled it out of the board, took it in and showed his wife. And he said, "Look at this, man." I've also won a lot of contests by thinking I was going to win. Crazy. They talk about this all the time. I've had it happen to me several times. So I want you to think about in your past when this kind of stuff has occurred to you. Then I want you to try to comb your reality for clues that you might have control over reality at one particular time. If you could share it in the comments, it'd be awesome. Because there's coincidence, which we need to separate, where you felt like the right thing occurred to you. And I think that's law of attraction, which is another beautiful thing you might want to itemize in the comments. But it's that moment when you said, it's going to be this way. And then it was. I think that's very valuable. So I had some hiccups. The computer actually locked up at 29 minutes. And when I played the audio back, it was making an absolutely horrible sound. I have my phone up against the wire that goes into the computer, so maybe I got a text message and that amount of EMF waves screwed up the stuff. I usually keep my phone really far away because, you know, when you get text messages and you hear that little sound, that used to happen on my old computer. So we'll see if I can't put this together. The levels are probably all over the place. I'll try to change that. I changed tracks because I had to continue going after about 28 minutes or so, which after I cut down all the blanks, all the pauses, which shouldn't be too many. So hopefully this works out. DeepThoughtsRadio.com for all the feeds. There's video, on YouTube and vid.me. There's audio on iTunes and Google Play. Plus, you can just go to the website, deepthoughtsradio.com. With your cell phone, hit the RSS feed icon or the podcast, and it will lock into whatever podcast reader you have on your phone. There's a locked Facebook group. Getting a lot of good members in there, new members that are sharing some great stuff. Again, I just grant permission for posts to go on that page. I'm not personally controlling, you know, a fair and balanced thing, right? So if a lot of flat earth things come through and I grant those, don't think I personally have some leniency towards that. I'm cutting out everybody who's the other way. I just push it in there. So just know that's how it works. But anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.